And welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your free premier resource for all things Ohio State news and sports. We are recording this show here around noon on Wednesday, June 29th, and it's good to be back. I am your intrepid host, Land Grant Holy Land Managing Editor Matt Brown. And I'm joined here, as always, by my buddy from the other side of the country, Mr. Colton Denning. Colton, how are you today?
Matt, I'm doing fantastic today. Middle of the week, just trying to get to the weekend. It's crazy that it's June 29th, and I think we talked about this last podcast. Usually in years past, there isn't a ton going on when it pertains to Ohio State sports and college football in general, unless there's a couple big scandals, which we've seen this summer as well. But Ohio State is kind of just making the headlines week after week with this recruiting class, which we'll get into. So it's been a little crazier than usual, I think.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that in general things are a little bit slower. Just given how hectic everything is just for me personally doing this for a living and during the season, I like having a little bit of time to be able to catch my breath. But you're not joking. Typically the only big news that happens from May until like late July, outside of some sports business stuff and outside of the crime blotter that we've kind of avoided here so far, it's recruiting. And I wrote about this a couple of days ago, but to say that Ohio State's 2017 recruiting class is going well would be really an enormous understatement. And it was already one of the very best in the country. Now it is the best in the country again. It got better in a big way when the Buckeyes picked up a little bit of a surprise commitment a couple of days ago, adding the top-ranked guard in the country from all the way out in St. John Bosco in California. They secured the commitment of 5-star, top 15 national prospect Wyatt Davis. This is crazy. The Buckeyes now have 3 of the top 15 players in the entire dang country. They have the number one recruiting class with 14 commits. And every single guy in this class but one is a consensus 4-star recruit. And the one that isn't, Blake Habel, is a kicker. And not just any kicker. He's the number one ranked kicker in the country. Kickers just don't get four-star ratings here. So I guess my question to you, since we've already talked a little bit more about Davis specifically on the website, does Ohio State have a chance of being one of the only, I think the only modern recruiting class to be nothing but blue chip players?
I don't know if it's likely, because you would assume that they're going to miss out on a few of these big name prospects they have coming in, and we'll probably get into that later, because there are some big name prospects coming in for Friday Night Lights next month on campus. But as of right now, with the way that Tate Martell, the quarterback commit, he posted that picture on Twitter of the big board with all of, you know, the receivers, some of the DBs, some of the defensive linemen and linebackers they're looking after, I don't think it's completely out of the question that they end up with consensus 4- and 5-star guys from the 24/7 sports rating. And we'll get into this a little bit. I think it's great. I think that, you know, stars aren't everything, but as we've learned and as we've seen throughout the history of college football, it's a pretty big damn deal. And if they can close a class with 20 or 22 kids who are at the most elite of their positions and in the country, I think that it just only further solidifies Ohio State in at least that number 2 spot in the country behind Alabama. And if not, with the head coach that we have here, making a name for number 1.
Yeah, I would actually argue that I would give Ohio State a better than 50% chance of finishing with nothing but blue chip players, outside of specialists. You know, it's possible the kicker gray shirts. Ohio State's had a couple of specialists in their last couple of recruiting classes that start on scholarship and end up gray shirting or moving on later. So I guess that's possible. But I don't really know – more than maybe one or two three-star kids that Ohio State's like really tied to at this point. And since this is probably only going to be a 20, maybe a 21-man recruiting class, that there's just not going to be the space for them. Because, I mean, we know about some of the five and high four-star targets for some of these last positions. But if somehow a couple of those guys miss, and that's probable given, you know, the way that recruiting goes, there's a couple other four-stars behind them as like that second-tier spot. So it would surprise me a little bit if the Buckeyes have to go down to take a three-star kid. Not that the three-star kid they end up taking would be bad, even in Ohio State's best recruiting class ever. I think in the kind of modern era, the 2013 class that was the nucleus for a national championship team, there were still a couple of three-star kids there. You know, obviously one of them, Darren Lee, is now a very rich man in the NFL. It's just so hard to do. Even the classes that have been consistently number one overall over the past couple of years typically take a handful of more developmental prospects. Alabama certainly does, but that doesn't look like it's going to be the case here this season. And you know, typically, even when you sign a really good recruiting class, maybe a third or more of those kids don't ever pan out. But you know, just looking at how everyone is being thought of from the analysts, you have to think that this is going to be the meat of some really successful Ohio State teams going on in the future. I guess my question here, like, you know, there's a ton of talent. You've got like 14 stars worth of offensive linemen here. Isaiah Pryor is one of the best safeties in the country. You're bringing in a couple of defensive backs here with some size. There looks like Ohio State is working to restock the interior of their defensive line in this group. Do you feel like there's any other position groups or needs that are currently being unmet either by this recruiting class or perhaps Ohio State's most recent one?
I think the biggest one in this class, as of right now, as of June 29th, is probably the wide receiver position. We've seen kind of these, not scat back wide receivers, but for lack of a better term, these tweener wide receivers come through Ohio State, and you have so much turnover from last season's team and now this year's team with a lot of kids who are green, and I think that they've really focused on trying to get more pure receiver types. And as of right now, there's nobody in this class that plays receiver. But you look at, like I said, Tate Martell is out there recruiting in the big three, Tyjon Lindsey, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and then I can't remember the last one, but they have
Trevon Grimes.
Yeah, Trevon Grimes, who it seems like at least two of those guys are very likely to end up at Ohio State in a very elite receiver recruits. So I think that that's the biggest position of need right now, but I'm not too worried about them being able to fill it. Other than that, do you think there's anywhere else where they're kind of slacking a little bit on this class or the next one?
No. I mean, Ohio State has still, I think, recruited wideouts relatively well, but it would not surprise me if there is some attrition in that room, you know, either before this season or after the season, since there's still a bunch of four-star guys there. But I think some of the people who are now sophomores and juniors are about to get recruited over, and people who do not separate themselves this season may end up going elsewhere. But you know, last year they added a couple of pure receiver types. Austin Mack is a pure receiver type. Benjamin Victor is like a bigger pure receiver guy. They're going to add at least two here in this group. I know the other big priority, I think, to finish is still defensive back, either at corner or safety. But I don't look at that as like a dire need, given who else is in this group and how the last class finished. It's all depth. It's all building out special teams, and it's the people that you expect to really be playmakers here down the road. So, like, you know, it's a great position to be in here. We know that there's a really strong correlation between blue chip recruiting ratio and ability to compete for national titles. We know there's a strong correlation between high recruiting in general in terms of being able to get elite talent and then just winning football games. It's clear that the direction things are going right now, the Buckeyes are well situated for the future. But there is one potential disadvantage to the way that this class is suiting up. We know that historically, the nexus for Ohio State recruiting has been the state of Ohio and you know, generally the Midwestern region. You know, you're supplementing that with kids from Florida. You're supplementing that with some kids along the East Coast. But Ohio has typically been the foundation, and that makes a lot of sense. So Ohio is produces the fifth most elite athletes, four or five star recruits over in the country. It's a little step below Georgia, a little bit farther below Florida and California and Texas, but very good high school football that's played here. And Ohio State doesn't share the state with another Power Five program. And traditionally, that they've really had a lot of that recruiting territory to themselves. This year, you are looking at kids. I mean, there's a couple of Ohio kids in here, but you know Tate Martell is from Vegas. Wyatt Davis is from California. J.K. Dobbins is from Texas. Jake Moretti is from Colorado. Haskell Garrett's also from Vegas. Antoine Simmons is from Ann Arbor. You have kids here from all over, and a lot of these biggest targets are other kids who are national prospects. The Ohio State's recruited Texas a lot more heavily in this particular recruiting class. They're active out west a little bit more. They're trying to grab a defensive tackle from Utah. And that's the state where the Buckeyes have been active. And when you have a limited number of spots and you're going national, that limits your ability to take some Ohio kids. This is a good year for Ohio high school football, and there's some kids that would easily be Buckeyes in other recruiting classes that might not get in. Jalen Harris is a big 6'5" wideout, solid 4-star kid, Cleveland Heights, has an Ohio State offer, would be an Ohio State, easy kid in any other class, and now it's looking like he's going to be in the outside of this class. And there's several other good Ohio kids who aren't going to be Buckeyes this year. Does this trend concern you in any way?
I think it has to concern you a little bit, just because you're going to have teams like Michigan State, who we've seen have success recruiting in Ohio, and not like in the way that Kentucky has, where they're recruiting Cincinnati and areas where Ohio State typically is either in battles for kids or not getting them anyway. But they've been having success in the Cincinnati area, some of the northern Ohio areas. So I think it certainly has to be concerning that even though Ohio State is bringing in a ton of talent, like you said, you have kids like Jalen Harris, who any other season as a 6'5", 210, 4-star receiver, he would be in this class and probably pretty early. It wouldn't even be a question. And as of right now, it looks like we talked about, they're going to have at least two big-time national receivers come in, and he's sort of an afterthought. And whether he sticks in the Big Ten or through another team that Ohio State plays against, that remains to be seen. But I think that is the major drawback of when you go national like this, is you're going to lose good recruits, and you're going to lose good recruits to schools in state. I think Michigan has kind of dropped the ball, at least for now, on recruiting Ohio, and Jim Harbaugh, as we've seen, he's kind of gone with the more national route and what they've done, especially in New Jersey and in the Northeast and a little bit in Florida as well. And they haven't really made Ohio a priority yet, but I think if Michigan really starts to go that route, then you may see Urban Meyer and Ohio State shift back to the cliche term of trying to fence in the state and keeping the best prospects. And when you look at it too, just not be completely doom and gloom, Ohio State has three of the top four kids. I think Amir Ripe is likely to be in this class, or he may be in this class. So they have four of the top 10 kids right now, including Jerron Cage, and then probably five with Amir Ripe. So it's not all bad, but it's certainly something that they're going to have to look out for going forward, because, like I said, schools like Michigan State especially have already had so much success recruiting and developing Ohio kids.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Michigan. We've talked about this a lot, how traditionally Michigan has tried to recruit Ohio and usually is able to pick off a couple of kids a year. And really, under the Harbaugh era, that hasn't been a priority at all. You're right. They focus more on out west. I think for the 2018 class, you're already starting to see that change a little bit. The Wolverines actually have two commitments from top 10 kids in Ohio. Although one of them, a 5-star defensive tackle, Leonard Taylor, who's from Springfield, not too far from Columbus, is expected to, but it's thought that could flip. That's a bit of a soft commitment. But there's, looking at that, at the list for 2018, I don't know that Ohio State is necessarily an overwhelming favorite for a lot of those kids, outside of maybe Trenton Gillison, a 4-star tight end from Pickerington. It's going to be a little bit of a battle. I'm reminded a little bit you know, given the choice between the absolute best players and slightly less good players who are from Ohio, I think I would want the best players possible. But I'm reminded of something that somebody brought up when we were talking about Ohio State basketball recruiting. And, you know, I think it was the 2015 recruiting class that basically completely transferred out was mostly national kids, kids from Texas, kids from Georgia. I think there was, you know, what kids from, you know, kids from Kentucky. And when adversity hits or when the struggle for playing time happens, if you don't, I mean, the kids who grew up rooting for Texas A&M or grew up rooting for other institutions aren't going to have that same level of equity as a kid who may have grown up rooting for Ohio State or is as familiar with the program as you would be if you grew up in a place like Cleveland Heights or Glenville or Canton. And there might be something to picking up that level of investment and losing that ground to either Michigan or Michigan State or an out-of-state program is significant. It's a difficult thing for a coaching staff to balance. I mean, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, you know, there's a bunch of problems with this recruiting class. It might be the best freaking recruiting class ever. But that's going to be, I think, a much more interesting storyline for the 2018 class and then maybe for some of these kids that get passed over this year who are very good, who might become the foundations for some solid Big Ten teams in the future. I don't know if maybe next year we can just immediately go, that kid's from Westerville, that kid's from St. John, that kid's from Wynton Woods, he's definitely going to be a Buckeye. It may be a little bit more complicated than that.
Well, and I think that's a good point. You bring up the adversity and, you know, the kids that are from this area and grow up wanting to be Buckeyes, even if they go through adversity, you know, where are they going to transfer to? Because they're in Ohio and the kids from either Texas or Florida or Utah, they have other places to go and places that they grew up probably rooting for. And this is definitely something to look into. I can't back this up, but I'd wonder if that would be more of a problem with how the program was under Tressel, where it was still one of the top programs in the country. They were putting players into the NFL, but it, especially at the end, I don't think it was quite at that upper crust of college football. And you look at now with what Ohio State did in the draft and how many players that they pumped out. And I think these kids now are understanding that, you know, I can go play for Urban Meyer and a great football program in front of a great bunch of fans and go to the NFL. So it's really become, I think, more of a business type of feel. And you're still going to have kids that want to get out if there is adversity. But I do think those high level kids, they know that, you know, with the strength training under Mickey Marotti and with this coaching staff and their track record, if they stick it out, they're probably going to go to the NFL. They may not be a first or second round pick, but even looking at Jalen Marshall or Tyvis Powell, those guys are in NFL camps. So I think that you're going to see high level kids stick it out. And there's always going to be stuff that doesn't work out, whether it's a three-star or a five-star or whatever. But the five-star kid that doesn't work out is always going to get more attention than the three-star from Ohio who transfers out. And that's just the nature of the game. But like you're saying, just looking at that 2018 list of Ohio recruits, it is a little bit unsettling that two of the top 10 kids are committed to Michigan right now, and we have so much time to see whether that'll change or not. But I'd imagine that it's not like Urban Meyer and the staff are just completely disregarding it and they're going to be caught off guard. I think that that's something they probably monitor pretty close. And I even know, I think it was Cleveland.com had an article last summer about Urban Meyer being worried about focusing too much national and sticking away from Ohio. So it's definitely something that is on their radar for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun thing to watch over the next couple of months. We're a long, long ass way away from National Signing Day for next year. an awful lot can change. So we know that things have been going really well for Ohio State recruiting. They're admittedly also going pretty well here for Michigan too. Their class isn't that much far behind Ohio State, so it has a few more players, and the average rating per recruit is a little bit farther down. But they're second in the Big Ten. But It's been interesting to see now that we're, you know, halfway here through the offseason and most schools have about half of their recruiting classes spoken for. If it's less than that, they've got some ground to make up. It's interesting to see how some of these other Big Ten programs are doing, because guess who is sitting at number 3 in the recruiting rankings right now, behind Ohio State and Michigan?
Roll damn Scarlet Knights.
Roll damn Scarlet Knights. Let one of the internet's foremost haters of Rutgers point out here that Scarlet Knights are number 3 in the Big Ten rankings right now. They are a top 25 recruiting program, and they have 2 blue chip kids who could play at most other big schools. Now, granted, a big part of that is because they have 19 commitments right now, which is one of the most in the country. Their average rating of 83.96 isn't that great. It's about average, but still, give credit to where credit's due. Rutgers is, over the last couple of weeks especially, really, I think, taking a step towards changing the prevailing narrative around recruiting in that program, and they've picked up a couple of decent kids.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at previous classes and what Ohio State was able to do, taking Curtis Samuel from that class. Michigan, like we said, and Jim Harbaugh has kind of really pilfered the state. I think Chris Partridge was the coach, correct, at one of those big New Jersey schools, and Jim Harbaugh brought him in to his staff. So they've really just been kind of raiding that area. And you look at right now, I think they have 4 of the top 20 kids in the state of New Jersey in their class right now. So it's less of us kind of saying, wow, look at Rutgers. They have one of the best classes in the country, and more so of Chris Ash is doing a really good job with what's been a bad situation there, not only for football, but athletics in general. And the fact that he's not turned the program around, because that remains to be seen on the field, but at least in terms of recruiting, he's got them pointed in the right direction and in a positive direction for the first time, and it seems like ever. And the fact that they're fighting tough and getting commitments from these New Jersey kids is very, I think, very impressive. And I think tying it back into Ohio State, Chris Ash mentioned how he's kind of just taken Urban Meyer's blueprint and gone from there. So I think if anything, it's just another thing to see how good Urban Meyer is at his job, and you look at the assistants and Chris Ash and what he's doing there. So very impressive, and good, honestly, good for Rutgers. I know we both talk a ton of shit about them on here, but it's nice to see them have at least one positive thing happen to them in recruiting.
Yeah, I think top to bottom, this year's class of New Jersey prospects is not as good as it was last year's. And maybe may not be as good as next year, but not. I mean, like, yeah, they're doing work. And if you look at some of the crystal ball ratings here, I think Rutgers is the betting favorite for like 6 out of the top 7 kids in the state. You know, they're battling Michigan hard for a couple of these guys in like the, you know, the 88 to 92 kind of recruiting category range. And those are people that Michigan might not push as heavily because they might be able to get a comparable kid out west, but that's a huge kid for Rutgers. So I think they've done well. Another program that we have constantly disparaged, I think, on their, as far as their efforts on the recruiting trail, that has had a nice summer so far, is Iowa. They are 4th. They, you know, they're notable here because they have a 5-star, which is something that Iowa almost never has, because it's an Iowa legacy. AJ Apensa, who's a big defensive end. They picked up Eno Benjamin, who's a really good 4-star running back out of Texas. I think maybe have benefited a little bit from some Texas programs being down. And then this is a really good year for high school football in Iowa, and they've cleaned up there. And I don't think Iowa's going to necessarily finish with like a top 20 class or anything, because I don't know if there's a blue chip kid that's favored to go in there. But that's, you know, those are high 3-star kids. And after, I think, a lukewarm couple of seasons, it looked like Iowa's reloading a little bit.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to see how not only this class finishes up, but we talk about with teams that win the national championship, how that the recruiting class that ends in that season they win the national championship, it's not that class that gets the bump, it's the class after. So I'd be interested to see after the season Iowa just had, even if it may have been a little bit of fool's gold, and we see them lose their last 2 games and get destroyed by Stanford in the Rose Bowl, I wonder if that gives them even more momentum going forward. And especially in the Big Ten West, if you're able to accrue just a decent amount of talent, you're at least going to put yourself in the position to play in the Big Ten title game every single year. So that can only help Iowa going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, the overall, I think that the trend lines in this conference here are pretty good. Nebraska's class is a little bit smaller, but they have a couple of blue chip kids, and they're really in the mix for some high four-star Californians. This class might have a little bit more star power than Nebraska's used to over the past couple of years. Maryland has done very well with their new coach. Things have started a little bit slower here for Michigan State, but I think that they're going to be able to clean up with a couple of these Ohio kids and finish strong as well. So really, you look at this, I'm like, okay, everyone seems to be in a pretty good direction, except for maybe Penn State, which is, I think, to be expected, given the lack of momentum around that program and maybe some uncertainty around their coaching staff. I think it'll take it some time for them to kind of get their groove, especially since they've kind of been boxed out a little bit around D.C. and New Jersey. The places where Penn State has typically done pretty well. And then, obviously, the dregs of the Big Ten, Minnesota, Purdue, Indiana, Illinois are not really doing anything right now. So let me I guess, on that note, given that maybe Penn State is making a change, maybe there'll be another change or two in the Big Ten this year, how do we feel about just the coaching depth in this conference right now as a whole? Do we feel like it's improved recently? There's some new faces in here. What's kind of your thinking about the coaching quality in this conference right now?
I think from at least 5 years ago, it's most certainly improved. You look at the upper echelon of coaches right now, I put it up with anything, along with the SEC, with Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh, Mark D'Antonio, whichever way you want to put those second two guys behind Meyer, and then even Kurt Ferentz and Iowa bouncing back last year and having a good season. I think you and I probably agree on what James Franklin is at this point. I know he was dealt a tough hand to begin at Penn State, but like you said, there doesn't seem to be much forward momentum going anywhere. But especially with the new hires, I think that Lovie Smith is a good hire for Illinois. There's only one way that program can go after the last year they've had in that athletic department. Mike Riley seems like he'll at least be stable at Nebraska. Tracy Clay's maybe not as much. I know you and I have had thoughts on him, and I don't think he's very long for that job, and maybe that is a Bo Pelini coming in. Daryl Hazel, maybe not long for the Purdue job anyway, but who is really going to come around and turn that program around? But with the new hires, DJ Durkin and Chris Ash, I think they both had success on the recruiting trail in their first seasons. We'll see what happens on the field, and especially when you're playing in a division with Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan, those schools aren't going to make a ton of noise. But I do think for the most part, the conference, especially coaching wise, is trending in the right direction. I haven't even mentioned Pat Fitzgerald. So I think it's probably the most depth the coaching has had in at least 10 years.
I don't know if I'm ready to go 10 years. I'm trying to think of like back in the 2005, 6, 7 range when, before the Big Ten sucks narrative was really kind of starting to stick. There was some solid depth in the group then, but I do think it's going in the right direction. And this particular football season, I think, will be very instructive. I like Lovie Smith as well for Illinois. I think it's about as good as they're going to get here. But the two new hires, yeah, I feel good about their recruiting momentum. I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains in terms of game management and program management, especially when it comes to dealing with adversity. Because both of those teams, Rutgers and Maryland, could get off to kind of slow starts, and how they're able, the young coaches are able to manage that staff or, you know, their players, then I think is going to be a bit of a challenge. I would expect probably two openings in the Big Ten this year. I think Purdue's kind of a foregone conclusion. They're doing nothing on the recruiting trail. That the team has been, you know, kind of stillborn for the past couple of seasons. The only reason Daryl Hazel's still there for this year is because Purdue's cheap, and they wanted to save a little bit of money on the buyout and they get rid of him this year. And I would not be shocked if Minnesota goes in a different direction now that they have a new athletic director and that their schedule has opened up a lot. And if they're still kind of around a 500 team, even with easier crossover games, I would not be surprised if the new management decides to take a run at what should be, I think, an easier year to be trying to find a coach. I don't think it's going to be as crazy as it was last football season when there were like a dozen openings by like week 7 or something crazy. I might be an easier time to go find somebody. There's some new guys that have some growing to do, but yeah, compared to how things were maybe 5 years ago, I think the Big Ten's in a good place, and if they're able to retain a couple of their bigger names, then as a whole, I think that will go a long way towards further stamping out the Big Ten sucks narrative, which is still kind of sticking around a little bit.
Well, and somebody we didn't talk about, and not that he would be fired even with a bad season, but what do you think about Paul Chryst in the Wisconsin program going forward? Because to me, even though they've won 10 games the past, I think, at least three seasons, and they went a quiet 10-3 last year, to me it seems like that program has kind of plateaued, and maybe just because they're in the West every year, they're going to be in the mix to win 9 or 10 games. But at least from a strength standpoint, Wisconsin doesn't really worry me as much as they did even in 2014 when Ohio State played them in the Big Ten championship. To me, it seems like that program, whether recruiting wise, and not that they ever recruited it at an elite level, and coaching wise, that they've kind of peaked, and maybe they're not going downhill, but there's nowhere to go except for down at this point.
Well, Wisconsin, more than almost anybody else, has benefited from really, really easy Big Ten schedules. It's been a couple of years since they've really had a big quality win during the regular season, and that has to change this year because they have the absolutely completely rugged Big Ten slate and LSU. And this is a team that I think might be about as good as it was last year, but because of a way more difficult schedule, could suddenly go down to 6 or 7 wins. And it's going to be interesting to see what people think of the coaching staff then. Like, I don't, you know, the Chryst hire didn't really do anything for me. I think part of that is working with Alvarez might be a little bit challenging. Wisconsin has the toughest academic benchmarks for any Big Ten school other than Northwestern for as far as football recruiting goes. It's like, you know, don't at me, but like, Michigan's a better school. It's harder to get in as a football recruit at Wisconsin than it is in Michigan. When you have those things, and you have an administration that doesn't want to spend a gajillion dollars like everyone else does, it's going to be a little bit harder. I think he's fine. I don't think he's going to be in the hot seat or anything because he's a Madison guy and he's going to have a ton of rope. But that's a team that's probably going to get worse next year and might get worse the year after that, especially if they're not able to get some kind of above average quarterback play, which they haven't had in a while. And the schedule's going to get a lot harder. So it'll be interesting to see what the natives in Madison think once this team, which has kind of perennially been competing for a division championship, takes a step back this season just because they're playing Ohio State and Michigan now.
Well, and just looking at the schedule, in a 6-week stretch, they play at Michigan State, at Michigan. They have the off week, and then they play Ohio State, at Iowa, Nebraska, and at Northwestern. And those last two games, Nebraska and at Northwestern, may not seem like a big deal, but in a 5-week stretch when you've played Michigan State and Michigan on the road and Iowa on the road with Ohio State sandwiched in the middle there, even with a bye week, I think that things could get pretty ugly if they don't, like you're saying, if the quarterback play is what it has been the last few seasons, that I think that there's a semi-legitimate shot that they're going to be really clawing for bowl eligibility this season with the schedule.
Sure. You know, all you need is a couple of injuries, and the wheels could fall off there, and then there'll be some my columns about what's going on at Wisconsin. I think they're going to make a bowl game, but whether that bowl game is the Foster Farms Bowl, yeah, that could definitely happen.
All right. Well, I think that's basically all of the football we had to talk today. We talked a little Ohio State recruiting, this maybe best recruiting class ever. Hopefully, we'll see what happens on the field and how it finishes out. But really exciting to talk about recruiting. The opening is coming up July 8th through the 10th. I think 11 Ohio State commits, a record, and it would have been 12 because Jake Moretti is injured and not showing up. That's going to happen, I think, on ESPN. They're going to televise that. The Friday Night Lights is happening next month, so we'll make sure to break down all of that stuff. But for the most important thing, Matt, I need some life advice right now.
Oh, well, this is literally the only thing I am good for.
And maybe not even advice, but I kind of feel like a jackass. So I'm going to a wedding this weekend, and it's one of my good buddies. And I'm an usher in the wedding, and I've never been involved in a wedding before. So I thought, you know, this is great. I bought a suit last summer. I got to wear it for one of my other friend's weddings. But I mean, this is a badass suit. I'm not one to prop myself up a bunch, but like, this is a nice suit. I look good in this suit. And I was so excited to get to wear it again. And I didn't realize as an usher, they pick out what you wear. Should I feel like a jerk that I'm pissed off that I don't get to wear my own suit?
I think so. As an usher, are you going to be, is there going to be a rehearsal dinner?
Yes, there is.
Okay, there's your chance. You get to wear your suit there, and you can wear that suit at the after party. I'm assuming that there's perhaps some kind of informal gathering after the wedding, perhaps some bars where you can bust that out if you'd so like. But if you're feeling bad, that might just be a reason for perhaps for you to think of other reasons to start wearing a suit. You might need to start upgrading the kind of events you're attending.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, and that makes me feel better about my referendum as myself, as a human being. And the kind of cool thing about – I may break it out afterwards, but the thing is we're up in like a camping ground. We're staying in one of those – have you ever seen those mini house shows where people buy those – I don't know what the show's called, but they just buy those like little houses on wheels?
Oh, this is my wife's shit. She keeps – I mean, like if she had a chance, we'd move out of the city. We'd go get some kind of yurt or some, you know, refurbished shed and just drag it back into the Appalachians and just live there.
Yeah, so there's like 25 of these things and everybody's staying in them. So we're in – they call them weekhouses. And so we're all staying in the weekhouse up in the mountains. So I don't know. I think I'll probably tear the suit up anyway if we're up in the mountains. And, you know, I'll end up having a little too much Patron and trying to go for a hike. And it just sounds like a bad idea. So I may just stick with whatever the outfit or the recommended outfit that we're supposed to wear as ushers.
That sounds like a lot of fun. The I did a wedding like that once. It was like in the Hocking Hills in rural Ohio, and you know, we were like, "Oh, this is not a suit coat experience. I think this was just a suspenders deal." But yeah, everyone gets good and liquored up, and by the end, nobody really cares what you're wearing. So then it's a perfect party.
Well, and are you yay or nay on weddings on 4th of July weekend?
I think that's fine. I'm sure it'll be hot as hell, but I think a wedding over a holiday, over a 3-day weekend, as long as it's not in the fall, that seems good and fine and good.
Yeah, I think it's good too, and I'd rather do that than like – I think my brother went to one on New Year's Eve last year, and that's not only are you interfering with the college football playoff now, but it's also New Year's Eve, and that just seems disrespectful to me.
Yeah, no one wants to go make that huge travel investment right after Christmas, too. Like, that's something that you think sounds cute because you heard about it on Pinterest, but it ends up just being a gigantic pain in the ass for anybody that doesn't live within like 30 minutes of where you are. That's a I'm getting married at 20 move. That's not an adult move right there.
Well, hot wedding takes on the Land Grant podcast. You can't hear this shit anywhere else.
No, if you're listening at the 35 minute mark, then you deserve this. In my humble opinion, I am not going to any weddings or think of the near future, because now most of my friends I think are now hitched, so my summer's a little bit slower. I gotta tell you though, I'm embarrassed. I'm in constant agony right now because I finally got a gym membership again. So like, okay, I'm gonna go. I've picked up a little bit of extra insulation here over the past couple months. I'm gonna get back to lifting weights. I'm gonna be better. And I squatted on Monday, and I was like, okay, no, listen, I haven't been in the weight room for a year. I gotta dial things way back. And I thought that I did, and like, it's 2 days later, I still can't freaking walk, man.
Hey, I think that's good news. That's even if you dialed it back a little bit, or you thought you were dialing it back, I think when you feel the soreness, that's when you know you've done well. I know that our own Harry Lyles can probably speak to pushing the weight around the gym, but it's great to hear that you're back pumping the iron.
It's so embarrassing though when you're thinking about I am in so much pain over a weight that is really an embarrassingly small amount of weight to be lifting. And you know, I'm not that old. I've got a little bit of gray hair here. I'm not 30 yet. You know, the fact that it wasn't that long ago when I could have picked up more than double of this and be able to walk just fine the next day. It's hurt my old man pride, man.
So is this evidence that the dad strength hasn't kicked in yet?
The dad strength I think picks up to other parts of the body and maybe not the quads. Like when you're holding a baby for hours and hours and hours. You might not show the bicep, but you secretly have the dad strength. Like I did show it in our company softball team. I managed to break a bat, which is something I haven't done since like middle school baseball, a wooden bat over, you know, just over sheer dadness.
Well, and so I think the main advice for anybody that's either having a kid or has just had a kid, if you're going to get back into the gym before you start squatting, just squat with the baby in your hands. That way the dad strength goes straight to the quads.
That's the trick. I was doing some in my living room, and then my kid saw, and then she just like did like 40 of them right in a row. You know, no big deal. Because babies, their natural like position is a squat. She thought it was fun, and I'm like, I'm dying. I hate you, you stupid baby. Let's wrap up on that. I hate you, you stupid baby. Matt Brown talking about his daughter. That's a great way to wrap up our latest podcast here.
That might have to be the title of the podcast.
There we go. I hate you, you stupid baby, Ohio State recruiting. Stupid kids. You can follow the show on iTunes. You can follow us on Blog Talk Radio. We are on SoundCloud. So subscribe on any one of those services. Leave us a comment, even if it isn't a 5-star. We take that to get better. Obviously, you can find the site, LandGrantHolyLand.com. We're on Facebook. We're posting a bunch of stuff on Facebook lately, including a series of about once a week of a Facebook Live. You might either see me or Luke, our beautiful faces, talking on your iPhone, answering your questions. We are, of course, on the Twitters at LandGrant33. I am at MattSBN. Colton, where are you?
I am at DubsCo. Do not follow me. You don't want to make that mistake.
No, all your takes are trash, except for your wrestling tweets.
Hey, I appreciate it. That's all I really strive for.
In the meantime, everybody, thanks here for listening. We'll be back as soon as we have some more stuff to talk about. I'm Matt. That's Colton. Thanks, and go Bucks.